A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Apologies for the background noise. It is the, it's the day of the first haying here on the pasture, so we've got a little bit of farm equipment in the background. So apologies if the noise is a little too distracting. All right, so we've got a lot to talk about today. I was hoping to have one of the NRA board members on today's program, but it was a marathon board meeting yesterday, about 12 and a half hours. And so we're going to be speaking with one, maybe more board member on tomorrow's Cam and Company. We're also going to be talking with John Diedrich from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on tomorrow's program. But today we're going to be taking a look at a piece at The Hill discussing the upcoming decision in Garland versus Cargill. That's the bump stock ban case that is pending before the Supreme Court. Before we get to that, though, I do want to just at least acknowledge what happened at the NRA board meetings yesterday. So I think this was a good day for those of us who are hoping to see the organization reformed and ultimately emerge stronger than it has been over the past few years. So Bob Barr elected president of the NRA. He was the only candidate not on the reform slate to win office. But again, I think, you know, from what I've heard, and I've spoken to a couple of the reform-minded board members just briefly last night after the meeting was over, they're pleased with yesterday's results. So I am feeling optimistic about this. So Bob Barr elected president, Doug Hamlin, who was the head of NRA's publications, the new executive vice president. The slate of reformers did pick up the first vice president, second vice president slots. Hamlin was the choice of the reform slate as well as for EVP. So this was, I think, again, a very good day for those who want to see the NRA turn the corner from the past few years, start to rebuild trust among members, start to get members back into the fold. It's not a guarantee. I mean, you know, this was a necessary first step, but there is a lot of work that is left to be done. And we're going to be talking about that in the upcoming days as well here on Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. But I am pleased with the results of the board meeting on Monday. Also pleased to see Jim Wallace of the Gun Owners Action League elected the 76th director at the NRA annual meetings. I will say I'm kind of appalled at the low turnout for the vote. You know, you have to be at the annual meetings to cast your vote for the 76th board member. According to the NRA, there were about 72,000 individuals who attended. Now, not all of them, I think, would have been eligible. You have to be an NRA member for, I think it's two straight years before you can cast your vote for the 76th board members. So not everybody in attendance would have been eligible to cast a vote, but there were less than 1,000 votes. There might have been less than 500 votes cast for the 76th board member in Dallas. And, you know, again, about 3% of the NRA membership cast a ballot in the board of directors elections, which is also not good. I mean, that's just, you know, we talk about low turnout elections being 20, 30, 40%, 3%, that's not good as well. So if you are an NRA member now or, you know, in the past, I would tell you that you've got an opportunity to be a part of reforming and rebuilding this organization now. Just don't sit on the sidelines. You can play an active role in this going forward. All right. So we'll talk more about the NRA on tomorrow's Cam and Company. Right now, though, let's talk about this. This is ostensibly a news story. This is not even an opinion column. And it gets so much stuff just woefully wrong from The Hill. Bump stock ruling could trigger booming rapid fire marketplace. Yes, there we go. So if the Supreme Court doesn't uphold the Trump administration's ban on bump stocks imposed in 2017. Well, the Hill reporter Clayton Vickers says that it could, quote, quickly open an unfettered marketplace of newer, more powerful rapid-fire devices. Yeah, as Vickers writes, the Trump administration, in a rare break from gun rights groups, quickly banned bump stocks after the 2017 mass shooting at a Las Vegas concert that was the deadliest in U.S. history. In the ensuing years, he says, gun rights groups challenged the underlying rationale that bump stocks are effectively machine guns, culminating in a legal fight now before the Supreme Court. Now, Vickers never really gets into the fact that the ATF had said that bump stocks weren't machine guns for years and years and years, and then reversed course after the Las Vegas shooting, right? He makes it seem like the challengers to the bump stock ban are challenging some long-standing ATF regulation. But again, the premise of this is that if the Supreme Court rules in favor of Michael Cargill and finds that the ATF rule went beyond the agency's authority and that the bump stock ban is not allowable, that suddenly the marketplace is going to be flooded, right, with all of these devices that turn semi-automatic firearms into machine guns. He quotes David Pacino, legal director at Giffords Law Center, who said that the lower courts are currently treating bump stocks and similar devices like machine guns, which are banned. Well, some lower courts are, but not every lower court. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, for example, found fault with the bump stock ban. I believe the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals found fault with the bump stock ban as well. Something else that Vickers... he acknowledges the Fifth Circuit because that's where Garland versus Cargill comes out of. But I don't think he mentioned the Sixth Circuit at all. Anyway, he goes on to quote Pacino as saying the use case for new rapid fire devices lower courts are considering is that somebody wants to have a machine gun and the law won't let them have one. If the Supreme Court does overturn the ban, he said this would be very, very dangerous for public safety. Now, there is a legal challenge going on to the existing prohibition on purchasing post-Hughes Amendment automatic firearms, as well as transferring full auto firearms. But contrary to what Pacino says, this is not the use case for lower courts, right? That somebody wants to have a machine gun and the law won't let them have one. Instead, the lower courts have wrestled with the actual rule that the ATF promulgated, as well as the federal definition of a machine gun, which is a firearm that can discharge more than one round with a single function of the trigger. Right? And bump stocks don't, or a firearm equipped with a bump stock, do not fire more than one round with a single function of the trigger. And so now the ATF and gun control groups are trying to actually redefine the word function, right? And they're trying to argue that, as long as your finger's moving back and forth rapidly, that should account for a single function or a single action of the user, right? So they're playing fast and loose with the federal statute in question. Vickers writes, the logic of legalization for all of the devices, not full auto devices, by the way, but bump stocks and things of that nature, is basically the same. It's not technically a machine gun. And if it's not named, it's not banned. Well, I don't know about you. That sounds like a fairly rational approach to take, right? If it's not a machine gun, it shouldn't be treated like a machine gun. And if it's not banned by law, it's not banned by statute, then it's not banned. What's the problem? If Congress wants to try to ban something, it could pass a law. Now, again, that might raise constitutional issues, but it would be within Congress's purview to at least pass a law, right? Now, again, I mentioned that Vickers' whole basis for this report is that if bump stocks are once again legal to sell, across the United States. And this is going to, open up the floodgates, right? Not only against bump stocks, but to things like forced reset triggers. But Vickers is also trying to argue that manufacturers are already getting around the law. He says in 2022, the ATF released an open letter advising federally licensed gun dealers that some forced reset triggers devices are illegal under the 1968 Gun Control Act. The ATF would not comment on what some may mean, right? The letter hasn't stopped manufacturers, he writes, from innovating new designs that achieve forced reset with names like the Wide Open Trigger, the Super Safety, the Alamo 15, or simply the FRT-15. This, he says, has led to a game of regulatory whack-a-mole with an ongoing cycle of sale, sanction, and then confiscation from buyers, forcing manufacturers to attempt a new workaround that may fall outside the some distinction. Again, the problem... Well, one of the problems is that the ATF does not come up with a classification that is easy to understand, that is a clear, bright line, right? And they specialize in this. So some forced reset triggers may be illegal, right? Some Pistols that are equipped with stabilizing braces, maybe short-barreled rifles. Some gun owners who sell a firearm from their private collection or even offer one for sale might be an unlicensed gun dealer. Some, now we can't tell you who, we can't tell you what, we can't tell you why, but we can tell you maybe you'll be violating federal law if you do this thing. Again, that is a continuing issue with the ATF's rules. The bump stock ban is actually one of the more explicit rules from the ATF, right? They may be abusing the statute and their regulatory authority to come up with that rule, but it is at least more of a clear, bright line. We're banning these devices, right, than what we've seen with the rules on frames and receivers, redefining again or banning some pistol stabilizing braces. The rule expanding who is engaged in the business of dealing firearms. The ATF specializes in these vague, fuzzy definitions that are not easy to comply with. In fact, in some cases, maybe impossible to know if you're in compliance. And I think that's by design. Because if they write a statute that is easy to follow and easy to understand, well, then you don't have people worrying too much that they're going to violate the law inadvertently. Right. But if you write a statute that is really vague, ill-defined, hard to follow, impossible to comply with, well, I shouldn't say impossible to comply with, impossible to know whether or not you're in compliance or whether or not you're violating the law, then it's more likely that gun owners will say, you know what, it's not worth the hassle. It's not worth the trouble. I don't want to get into a prison cell for the next 10 years. So I'm just not going to do this thing because I don't know if I can or not. That is not a bug in these ATF rules. It is a feature of the ATF rules. All right, back to the report by Clayton Vickers. He spoke not only with Pacino at Giffords, but he also spoke with Shira Feldman, Director of Constitutional Litigation at Brady United Against Gun Violence. I love the phrase Director of Constitutional Litigation, considering what they're trying to do is so patently unconstitutional. She says that a debate over the single function of a trigger misses the point of bans on machine guns. She says the justices are aware that there's a sort of forced nature to the other side's argument. I don't even know what that means. Brady has also filed a brief in Cargill. And Feldman asks, is it really reasonable that Congress would have written the law such that we have to read these statutes in a way that we wouldn't normally parse language? Well, hang on now. Because again, we can argue. I mean, listen, I agree. Sometimes bills are written in such legislatese that it barely resembles English, much less the English that you and I would speak in conversation. But the phrase single function of a trigger, I would argue, it really isn't an example of legislatese. And Congress did mean what it said when it declared that a machine gun is a gun that fires more than one round by a single function of the trigger. They didn't say a single function of the user. They didn't say a firearm is a machine gun if it has a device attached to it that can increase the rate of fire. Right? All of those options were available to the lawmakers that came up with the National Firearms Act, that came up with the Gun Control Act of 1968. And they chose the language that they did for a reason. Vickers writes, according to Feldman and fellow legal experts at Brady, the gun industry has been, quote, disingenuous in calling rapid fire accessories legal and has sold them before as a get them before they're banned products. Well, first of all, it's not disingenuous to call something that's legal, right? It would be disingenuous if these companies were selling a product that the ATF or Congress had declared to be verboten. Then it would not only be disingenuous, it would be a crime, right? But that's not what's happening. When Vickers talks about the regulatory whack-a-mole, what he's talking about are companies that are trying to comply with the letter of the law, are making products available to their customers, because there is a demand for those products. And when gun control groups say, well, no, we don't want them to sell that either, Then they'll get the ATF to come up with a rule, or they'll introduce a bill in Congress, which won't go very far in a divided Congress, right? So really, they are reliant on the executive branch right now, with Biden in office, to enact gun control measures. And when the ATF says, well, no, 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 now you can't do this, then they will, A, sue in court, right, and challenge the new ATF regulation. But they will also, again, try to find a workaround so they can continue to make a product that does not violate ATF regulations or federal law. That's not disingenuous under any reading. I'm starting to wonder if we need to send the folks at Brady a dictionary so they can understand some of the words that they're using here. Now, Vickers did speak with Michael Cargill. So it wasn't all anti-gunners talking to him for his story at the Hill. Cargill, he says, argues that the ATF took up powers meant for Congress when it started to treat bump stocks like machine guns. In a phone interview with the Hill, Cargill also said the question before the Supreme Court simply comes down to the letter of the law. It's not justification enough, he says, to say that it could be used in a particular crime, even if it was used in the worst shooting in the United States. It's not about the rate of fire. This is about the action and the trigger. If I pull the trigger and one round comes out, that's semi-automatic. And obviously, I am in agreement with Michael Cargill. But I would say that the Cargill case, it does involve more than just the statute in question. Because what the gun control groups and ultimately the federal government is asking the court to do is to allow them to redefine words for their own agenda. Well, we don't like the way this particular statute reads, so we can't change the text of the statute, right? We don't have the votes to do it. But what we want to do is to change the interpretation of this statute by now pretending that function means something different, by now pretending that semi-auto means something different. And again, they're not just doing this with a bump stock ban. You've got gun control activists who are trying to get the Biden administration to reclassify some or all semi-automatic firearms as machine guns, even though, again, they don't meet the federal definition. They're trying to claim that, well, because semi-automatic firearms can be readily converted to full auto, they should be treated as machine guns. So this is about whether or not the Supreme Court is going to allow this Orwellian redefining of language to suit a gun control agenda, or whether the court will step in and say, no, no, no. The ATF does have some regulatory authority, but it does not have the authority to, in essence, create new law out of a new interpretation of an existing statute. That's the issue here, and it goes far beyond just a ban on bump stocks. If the ATF has the power to do this, then the EPA has the power to do this. Then the FCC has the power to do this. Every government agency would have the power to craft new law out of existing regulation simply by saying, well, no, actually, we now think it means something completely different. We are approaching the end of the court's term, and I suspect that Cargill, along with Rahimi, will be among the last cases that we actually hear from the court. So, it could be next week. I think it's more likely going to be early June, but within the next few weeks, we are likely going to get two pretty big Supreme Court decisions, not exactly, the cases that many of us want to see the court take. the Illinois gun ban cases are still alive, and fingers crossed the court does grant cert in those cases. But, these are cases primarily that have been brought by the government seeking to uphold gun control laws that the court has agreed to accept. And again, even though those aren't the cases that I necessarily would have liked to have seen the court take up post-Bruin, it's what we got, and hopefully we get good decisions here in the weeks to come. All right, before we turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for just a second. At the very heart of our democracy lies a principle that we hold sacred: free speech. It is the cornerstone that supports every freedom we cherish. Yet in today's digital age, discussions about our wealth, our rights, and our future are being silenced or overshadowed in mainstream narratives, leaving many folks feeling voiceless in conversations that are crucial to our financial independence and security. That's where Wealth Protection Research steps in. They're armed with a mission that's never been more critical. Wealth Protection Research is not a financial advisory firm. They're defenders of free speech, committed to giving a voice to the silenced. Wealth Protection Research tirelessly seeks out financial experts, the voices that challenge prevailing narratives, especially as we navigate the uncertainties of the 2024 election. Wealth Protection Research has created a 2024 Election Wealth Protection Report. This free report highlights the three best ideas for protecting and growing your money heading into the 2024 election. It contains ideas the mainstream media won't touch. Listeners can get it completely free. Just text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. If you believe in the sanctity of free speech and the importance of financial freedom, then act now. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy of this 2024 Election Protection Report. It's time to widen the scope of what we're told, to hear the ideas the establishment doesn't think you can handle, and to take control of our financial destinies. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. All right, now let's turn our attention to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with the case out of Longview, Texas. Infuriatingly short on details, I might add. But here's what we know. A man in Longview has received a sentence of probation after injuring a woman and a teenager in a shooting. 33-year-old Dakota Lane Sedbury was arrested last August 15th. He was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon after a woman and a teen were injured in a shooting at a home in Longview, Texas, 5 days previously on August the 10th. Sedbury ended up pleading guilty to the charge in Judge J. Scott Novy's court and was then sentenced to 5 years probation. According to KLTV, investigators in the original case said the shooting took place outside the residence, that they believe there was a connection between Sedbury and the victims. But we don't know why the judge would accept a plea deal that means Sedbury is now free after shooting two people less than a year ago. Even if Sedbury had remained behind bars from the time of his arrest until he was sentenced, I mean, you're basically talking about, what, a 9-month jail stay as the punishment for shooting two individuals? That seems awfully light to me, particularly given this is the Lone Star State of Texas we're talking about here. But I'll try to find out more information about why this deal was offered. I understand why it was accepted. It's a heck of a deal. But why was this plea deal offered to the defendant, and why did the judge go along with it? This incredibly lax slap on the wrist. All right, today's armed citizen story from California, where a woman shot and killed a man in self-defense, according to police in Los Angeles County. This was in Monrovia, California. About 9:45 Friday night, authorities got a call, reports of a shooting, about 9:47 when they responded. Actually, I guess the first call was about a possible violation of a restraining order. And so when L.A. County Sheriff's deputies showed up on the scene, they found a man suffering from a gunshot wound. He was pronounced dead there at the scene. L.A. Sheriff's Department says the man arrived at the home armed with knives and attempted to stab a white male and a white female who lived at the property. The suspect, described as an Asian male, was shot by the female in self-defense to stop him from advancing on her and the male. Police say both the female and the male who lived at the home were questioned by deputies. Neither was arrested. They say it's unclear at this point how the three individuals knew each other or a motive for why the man went onto the property with weapons. It's also unclear as to whether or not, I mean, it kind of sounds like this guy had a restraining order out against him. So there might have been some previous connection, maybe a dating partner or something like that. We don't know. Again, there's still some more details that need to come out about this case. But the L.A. Sheriff's Department, again, says this was an act of self-defense. The woman will not be facing any charges for defending herself and the male companion there against a individual who was armed with knives and who showed up at a place where he was not supposed to be. Finally, today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A man in Florida, Boca Raton, Florida, Seth Stern, who was able to save the life of a boy from drowning there in Boca Raton at Boca Inlet. Stern says his parental instincts just took over and he went for it. He says it was a couple weeks ago. He was filming his kids dump trash into the ocean. He says, and I happen to look back and I notice a young man is really struggling, yelling for help, flailing his arms. He said the kid was going underwater numerous times and I yelled for him to swim to me. And his response was, I can't. I don't have enough energy. So Seth Stern, along with two other good Samaritans, went into the water. And he said, I'm not Michael Phelps by any stretch here, but I'm a pretty decent swimmer, and the current was really ripping me. Thankfully, the group of good Samaritans able to pull the boy out of the water, ocean rescue crews were there on scene to help him. Stern said the extra minute or two in the water could have cost the kid his life. He said, for me, it felt like an eternity. Stern, father of two young boys, he said, you know, I've got hundreds of cuts all over my hands, my legs, all over my body, bottom of my feet hurt. But he said, quite honestly, that's the price to pay to save a life. I do it a million times over. He said, I did end up in the hospital with a tetanus shot, strong antibiotic to prevent infection from all the bacteria. He would like to see the city of Boca Raton place a life preservers and warning signs by the inlet to help protect the community. We'll see if that happens. But thankfully, this child's life was saved thanks to the quick actions of Seth Stern and the other good Samaritans there in Boca Raton, Florida, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to save a stranger's life. So a tip of the cap to Seth and those other strangers. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. Again, we've got a beefy show scheduled for you tomorrow. We're going to be talking with John Diedrich. We'll be talking with, fingers crossed, at least one NRA board member. It was, again, a late night for the board on Monday. Tuesday, most of these folks are traveling back home, so it was really tough to get somebody on the horn or in front of a camera this morning. But we will hopefully be talking with at least one NRA board member on tomorrow's show, again, along with John Diedrich from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. A follow-up on a great event held last week with gun owners talking about mental health. Now, this isn't gun control activists talking to gun owners or talking down to gun owners. This is gun owners talking to one another about the importance of mental health. And it sounded like it was a great event. Our friends from Walk the Talk America took part, and looking forward to hearing more about it from John Diedrich on tomorrow's program. In the meantime, don't forget to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping it up to date with all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. And if you like what you see, I would encourage you, as always, to become a VIP or VIP Gold member. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe, use the promo code SAVEAMERICA, and you can get a significant discount on your VIP or VIP Gold membership. You'll get exclusive content, an ad-free experience, the ability to comment on stories. If you're a VIP Gold member, there's all kinds of great content across the Town Hall Media family of websites, including the Hot Air's Ed Morrissey, his weekly VIP Gold live chat with myself. We do that every Wednesday at the 1:30 p.m. Eastern. Would love for you to be a part of that tomorrow by becoming a VIP Gold member today. Again, just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code SAVEAMERICA. All right, we'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.